Well, good afternoon and welcome to Local Matters. Our guest today is Scott Lethy, the Chief Clinical Officer at Cookeville Regional Medical Center. Scott, we are delighted to have you back with us, and boy, this will be an important conversation.
Well, thank you. Glad to come back and share what we can do to help out.
Well, not everyone knows what the Chief Clinical Officer does or what your background is. So tell us a little bit about yourself and about your role at Cookeville Regional Medical Center.
Title Chief Clinical Officer means that I am a nurse by training and educational background. My clinical background kind of cut my teeth in intensive care units and emergency departments, worked in a variety of places from very large trauma centers in million-person cities such as Las Vegas to academic centers to small community hospitals in California, 60 people. So kind of been hither and yon,
all
so
around
to speak,
the barn, yes.
Kind of a little deliberate to try and round out the career and the resources. And my most loved is community-based facilities. So I am here in Cookeville to be closer to family and grateful for the opportunity.
And you, as chief nursing officer, as one of your roles, you supervise a lot of nurses, coordinate a lot of nurses at the hospital.
Yes, probably. I think we have over 600 licensed staff, and then we've got other support staff. Cardiopulmonary is also one of my areas, which is your respiratory therapist, EKG techs, things of that nature, all the good folks that help do direct patient care at the bedside.
So pretty complex organization. And wow, what a period we've been through and are currently going through. So Putnam County was hit with tornadoes back in March, and then ever since, coronavirus has raised its ugly head. So talk for a moment about the current situation at Cookeville Regional in terms of coronavirus and other critical care kind of issues.
Certainly. Just on the forward note, we are seeing sicker patients than normal, sicker than we say a year ago, sicker than average, especially for this time of year. We contribute a lot of that to people having put off medical care, whether it was due to access where services were not available or services were more limited based on the current unfortunate environment. Some people had fears of going and being seen or being treated for risk of exposure, and the consequences, unfortunately, are more acute, more interventions needed, sicker people, and most likely longer stays with us currently.
So, and I hadn't thought a lot about that, but it happened to me too. I had a procedure postponed and it turned out fine. But I guess if someone postponed a heart checkup when they were a little afraid of coming in and getting exposed to coronavirus, that could lead to dire consequences, couldn't it?
Absolutely. Would just urge people to do their best to maintain their current status in terms of medical care, whether it's now that the dentist is open going because oral care is linked to heart disease. You know, same thing, if you need a heart checkup, please get it done before there may be an unfortunate outcome. We've seen unfortunate outcomes with people that are having stroke symptoms, and when they come see us, it's too late for us to intervene. So, you know, in some cases, people have disabilities because they have had that fear and the inability to get
right
intervention in an appropriate manner. It's unfortunate, but it's what we've seen.
So it's a double-edged sword. You you know, you avoid the COVID, but you may die from something else because you postponed.
Correct.
Well, speaking of COVID, I know CRMC did a number of things early in the pandemic, and you opened a COVID wing, in effect, a quarantine wing, if you will. Talk about that a bit and about, now we don't know exactly what day this program will air, so you can't say today we've got, because you may not have at the point that this airs, but just roughly what kind of numbers are you seeing?
Currently, as we said, point in time at this current moment, we have 36 patients that are either suspect or positive. 20 of those approximately are positive. Last week we had a big upswing, which was 40 people, which actually triggered us opening another part of the hospital specific for COVID or COVID rule outs. for people. So we've gone through, I wouldn't say extreme measures, but significant items. One of those, which is putting a lot of stress, especially on the patients and the families, is we have limited or very much minimized visitation. This is something that you've seen across the industry and across the country. I know personally I've had family impacted by it. It creates more anxiety for folks, but we're doing it for several reasons. One is we are making an effort to minimize traffic into the facility. If you take a look at the current figures out of the 40-plus thousand tests that have been done in the Upper Cumberland, in May, the positive rate was approximately 4%. First week of July, it's 9%. So we've seen more than a double in the positive caseload that we're seeing. So limiting foot traffic into the facility is one way that we've done it. We've asked people, or really directed people, not even to bring food from home because we don't know what the home containers are.
Right.
And just to, you know, so we don't want to make sure we put leftovers from someone's grandma's favorite brownies in the refrigerator and contaminate someone else's food, as sarcastic as that comment may seem. On the other side, to try and cope with that, we're doing more video FaceTime. We've purchased iPads to try and at least get people some face-to-face and voice. We are human creatures.
And we want to talk to loved ones.
And we are social creatures.
Yeah.
And the biggest component that's impacting people is that lack of socialization. And we're seeing that roll over into the behavioral health side as well. My big personal concern is especially for those that are more senior in age, a lot of widows, widowers. It's challenging. I personally have, you know, have a mother who I didn't go see for her 85th birthday in another state. She hasn't been out of her apartment since March.
And that's got to be tough. It's really got to be tough. Yeah.
So it creates stressors across the continuum. We're doing our best to be empathetic. And in certain circumstances, we do allow visitors, again, to try and, you know, end of life, birthing mothers, they can have one person stay with them for the duration. But we say you can't go outside and have a cigarette and go to McDonald's and come back and bring takeout. It's an effort to minimize risk. So it's the risk of traffic in, decrease the risk of any cross-contamination, but even more importantly is to decrease the risk of potential exposure to our staff, because without them, we don't have the ability to take care of folks. And we're seeing that impact across the community. We have approximately a dozen staff members who are not working because either they've been exposed, and we are, I would say 95% sure all, but I think one of them have been from community. One may have been person to person from a coworker environment, but to the best of our knowledge, we've had no patient to employee or employee to patient cross contamination. So the staff have done an amazing job in terms of containment. But again, if a family member gets tested, then our staff are staying home until that test result comes back or that 2 week duration.
That quarantine is important, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, this is Local Matters, and we are talking educational matters with Scott Levy. Today, we're talking primarily about education related to COVID or coronavirus, and about the regional healthcare system also. So, Scott, this opening up that we saw in the month of July, July 4th weekend, I guess, was the big one. It really did trigger additional a doubling, as if I heard you right, of positive cases per capita, if you will, or per testing. So what kind of symptoms do people need to look for?
The most prominent symptoms are fever. About a third of people are seen with fever, shortness of breath, and a dry cough are the top three. There are some much smaller ones which have hit the news. Loss of sense of smell is well under 5% of the group. Some people are showing some very short term, as in one or two episode, what we would call GI tract or abdominal digestional, you know, ailments, and may present themselves very, very bristly once or twice, and they're finished. And that's the only symptom they have. But the primary are shortness of breath with fever and a dry cough. So there is a differentiation between runny eyes and, you know, things that you may see more so with allergies. We're not encouraging people to discount their symptoms, but we want people to be aware of their symptoms.
Yeah, it is. I spent a lot of time gardening in the last 6 to 8 weeks, and the allergy season is here. There's no question. So it's worrisome when you get some of those symptoms and you think, is this going to lead to something really bad? What happens if they get them? Do you don't want them showing up at the emergency room initially? Is that correct, or how do you handle that?
Correct. If you are in a, we'll say, a state of health like you would be with, we'll go back to the, you know, the analogy of the flu. It's mm-hmm. the same family. They're both coronavirus, common cold, coronavirus. If you're in a position where you're uncomfortable, let's say you have the headache and you've got some body aches and you got a dry cough, but you're not short of breath, you're not having what we call exertional shortness of breath, walking across the room, you know, picking up something heavy and walking down the hall, if you're not getting short of breath doing normal activities, you're probably okay. I would encourage you to contact your provider, your primary doctor, people of those. They may direct you for a test, or they may not at the time. But if you get to a point where you have personal concerns in terms of how you're feeling, and come in and get them addressed. As a hospital, we are going to treat you based on your symptoms and the severity of your symptoms. Just because you show up does not mean you're going to get tested. We have to take a look. If your symptoms are similar and suspect, we will test you. But if you're doing well enough not to be admitted, which is certainly our hope, we will discharge you home and encourage you to social isolate until your results are back, and then follow those guidelines if they're positive or negative, including your family.
Well, that's good advice, and it's something we all need to pay a lot of attention to right now. These are serious times, and I think, and again, with today's date, with the time we're recording, there are over 500,000 people who died from this virus across the world, mm-hmm. and certainly over 150,000 here in the United States. So it's a serious thing, and has the potential to mess up more than just your day, doesn't it?
It does.
Well, this is Local Matters. We're going to take a quick break and then come back for our second half.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue, across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Welcome back to Local Matters. We are talking to Scott Lethe, the Chief Clinical Officer at Cookeville Regional Medical Center, a man who has had a very important job and a very busy time over the last few months. Jiminy, I can't imagine for all the folks at CRMC and all the healthcare providers. We've called them heroes. They certainly have worked their tails off to try to help us get through this time. Scott, we're going to be going back to school in some form or another, and I know everyone from the Secretary of Education down says we've got to get kids back into a learning environment of some type. At the time we're recording, Putnam County Schools hasn't announced their plan, but we know generally, I think, what it will be. Just in terms of common sense advice from a clinician to a parent, what would you recommend that parents pay most attention to in terms of however kids are going back to school?
The first item would be have the conversation in terms of, I would say, personal hygiene. You know, don't rub your face. Keep your fingers out of your eyes. Wash your hands as you know, use the restroom, wash your hands. If you're going down the hall for something, hand sanitizer is available. A lot of teachers keep it on their desk. It's not in major short supply currently. Maybe pack your kid off with their own little bottle, and then they can refill it at the end of the day. So, you know, after if they're eating in a more common area, because who knows what the wipe down is in between, they can clean their hands when they go back into the classroom or after they've picked up their books in their locker kind of thing. Just wipe things down. Small children, I don't see wearing face masks on the playground. Again, because we're social creatures, we're going to interact with folks. But do your best in terms of the masking, the social distancing, and the environment is yet, I think, to be determined how all that is going to be accomplished or recommended. Do your best to respect personal space and maintain
awareness.
And
that's so hard for a child, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And maintain the awareness of those around you, really, would be my biggest recommendation. Just, as we say, not necessarily what we call the personal protection equipment in terms of PPE. Wear your mask when possible in common areas and hand sanitize and try not to rub your face.
And I guess we just need to reinforce that every time we can, because, boy, those are tough for any human being, but especially the younger kids that
Absolutely.
Are gregarious and social and just want to touch you. So it's tough. And I know teachers are going to have an especially challenging time during this, so I guess we can all just keep them in our thoughts and prayers.
The big positive is if you take a look at the statistics, the younger populace, although they may be exposed or even if tested and positive, their health condition generally is maintained much more normal, and they've had much less of a bad outcome or need for intervention. So that's a big positive.
Yep. Yeah, that is. And what's the latest on them being a vector, bringing it home to the parents and the grandparents?
My personal opinion is small children are vectors on a continual basis. As you said, they love to touch things and explore their environment. If you have more senior family members, grandparents, or you know, visiting people from out of town, do your best, again, hand sanitize, social distance, wear your mask. You know, even if you're, you know, if you haven't seen grandma in 6 months, at least take some precautions to the best of the ability.
She's going to want a hug just as much as the child.
But. Absolutely. But, you know, the more senior the individual, the higher the risk for decreased immunes and other comorbidities, whether it's diabetes, heart disease, what we call COPD or chronic respiratory ailments. Any of those items increase the severity and the risk to the individual.
And it's really funny. My grandchildren remind me that I'm at risk. So their parents have done a good job of indoctrinating them that, hey, don't get anywhere near granddad. It's almost embarrassing. Well, we want to encourage everyone as we go back to school. I think for the sake of their education, it's important that they get back in some kind of a learning environment, classroom, distance, whatever, but a learning environment. And we just want to encourage people to be sensitive and to keep their children aware of what's going on here. Well, Scott, I wanted to change topics a little bit and go to a subject that's a couple of more months old, but still really important for Putnam County, and one that has some educational issues in it. So this is Education Matters, and we're talking to Scott Lethe, the Chief Clinical Officer at Cookeville Regional Medical Center. Scott, the other big epicenter for CRMC in the last few months was the impact of the tornado. It created an emergency response epicenter there that was a pretty strong one, but tell us how the tornado affected Cookeville Regional.
Hit us right in the heart. One, from a community dynamic. Two, from the CRMC family. We had people and family members who not only lost their homes, we did unfortunately have one loss of an employee through the tragic event. It was a very proud moment for us in terms of how we were able to respond and the positive outcomes that we were able to succeed in. It could not have been done without the regional group, the regional focus, regional EMS, so much. And then, of course, the aftermath in terms of the outpouring from the community was just amazing and astounding. So very proud moment in terms of how things were handled and the many positive outcomes that we had from the day of the event. We treated 91 patients. We transferred about 13, probably about five of those, I believe, were children, very young children.
Yep.
It's, you know, when the phone rings, at the tornado sirens go off at, I don't know, about 2 a.m. and your phone rings about 20 minutes later, it's not a good night.
Nope.
But again, to the credit of the team, I got to work probably about 2:30, 2:40 in the morning, and everybody that was there was in full swing. We had people show up that never even got called, just to literally, we had people that had no clinical experience delivering food to coworkers. We had people no clinical experience pushing wheelchairs and helping patients. And then the clinical team really, I would say, divided and conquered, so to speak. And again, with the regional EMS and disaster emergency preparedness teams, a lot of great communication happened, a lot of great staging. And said, because of that, we had some very positive outcomes in a very tragic event.
And it wasn't like you don't plan for those things. There is planning every month on what's called LEPC, Local Emergency Planning Coordinators, and you set in on those. So, but still, you just can't quite predict the way the disaster will roll out, can you?
No, there's practice and there's real life. The good news is practice does prepare you. We do at least two disaster events a year. We do one, what we call as a tabletop, is here's the scenario, and then we break out the toys, so to speak, and we go over do it on kind of more of a whiteboard situation. And then we do at least one moulage where people, literally students, love it because they get to dress up with broken bones and all sorts
of. And you put ketchup on them or some other dye that looks like blood.
Yeah, hand them a hot dog on the way in the door to go with the ketchup. But you know, it's a drill with influx designed to stress the environment. And we do our very best to tell people, you know, this may be practice. You know it's practice. And we know it may deter from what's going on around you, but you need to treat it as such. And the tornado is a great way to do this. When we have what we call a bolus, we get a large group of patients at one time. And within, I think, the first 3 hours, I think we saw over 60 patients.
Wow.
Our capacity in our ER is 37 beds. So.
And it wasn't just the ER. You had people in surgery. You had all, and you had triage set up before they ever got to that point. So it was a really fast moving, complex operation, wasn't it?
Yes.
Well, I know the staff responded well, and I know there. I remember being over there that morning, or I guess it was that afternoon, and there was a line of students, primarily students from Tennessee Tech, standing out front to give blood, and it had to be a half block long, I think. It was just amazing. So we made it through that crisis, but blood supply is something we could talk about anytime.
Absolutely.
It's important that people give blood if they can, isn't it?
Yeah. If you give blood, you're allowed to donate every X number of weeks back to back. Each unit literally can help save three lives based on its platelets, the plasma, and the whole blood components. And now is even much more important. Regionally, there is not a shortage of blood supply, but I would tell you that being the warmer season, events that we call trauma tend to increase. People are much more active, more outdoors. Tend to get on vehicles that move a lot faster. So there is an increased need seasonally for blood usage.
Well, this is Local Matters. We have been talking to Scott Lethe, the Chief Clinical Officer at Cookeville Regional Medical Center. And Scott, we haven't even scratched the surface of what we could talk about, but I really appreciate you taking time to be with us. I guess you would say to everyone, stay safe and stay aware during this time.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being here, and we'll have you back soon.
Thank you for the opportunity to share.